Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast. It's Dr. Lisa and Dr. Toni together again. Woo-woo! We haven't seen each other for a while. We've been having guests or recording separately. But today, we're going to talk about a big concern a lot of women suffer from, especially in the perimenopausal years. Like, are you one of those people where by the end of the day, you have to loosen your button or you just want to wear stretchy yoga pants? Or are you waking up in the morning and you already feel bloated? Like, bloating is a big concern and it can make you feel uncomfortable. And there can be so many reasons to cause it, from hormones, from overeating, from cortisol imbalances and food sensitivities and more. So we're going to unpack all of that today so we can figure out how to prevent your bloating and what to do if you feel bloated. Does that sound good, Toni?
Oh, yes. This again, like Dr. Lisa and I, have women coming into our office all the time wondering why they're feeling bloated. And I think especially around, you know, with the changes around COVID, I mean, more people were kind of not having to necessarily wear like real pants,
exactly.
Able to wear kind of stretchy yoga pants all the time. And so, you know, they could kind of get away with it. And now once we're kind of getting back into the real world, maybe wearing less stretchy pants, it's really something that, unfortunately, you know, I think especially in North America, millions of women can experience different symptoms of IBS or irritable bowel syndrome. And bloating is definitely one of them. Whether you actually are recognizing it or thinking about it as irritable bowel syndrome, we've definitely talked about, you know, these kind of topics before, especially just more recently, talked about SIBO being associated with IBS. In a previous episode, in episode 31. So you can definitely check that out. But especially just to look at this idea of, you know, all the different reasons why you could be experiencing bloating so that you could really get down to the root cause of the issue and know that, you know, figuring out what exactly is behind your bloating, that way you can really help to alleviate it or even prevent it in the first place. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know about you, Lisa. When a lot of women come into my office, they are thinking automatically that, oh, it has to do with the food I'm eating, or am I having a food sensitivity? And sometimes that is the case, but Exactly. Sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We definitely want to look at, you know, in perimenopause, there are a lot of hormone changes. We know there can be, you know, higher estrogen relative to lower progesterone. And then eventually our estrogen can, you know, drop and stay lower. But those are involved in fluid regulation in the body too. And some people actually have, you know, maybe undiagnosed fibroids or things that are fueled by that higher estrogen level. And that can impinge how things are moving through the digestive tract, right? So then there can be bloating and pressure, and then those hormone changes can really influence how you feel too. So we want to rule out hormonal imbalances like that. And we know, you know, as you enter into perimenopause, progesterone starts to decline, and we need progesterone because it's a mild diuretic and it supports sodium loss and water loss from the kidneys. So we urinate out, you know, that excess fluid. And when estrogen's pretty high, it influences another type of regulatory hormone that can cause more water retention too. So it's a fine balance of having the right hormone hormones at the right time, at the right level. And when they are not at those, in those ranges, then you are going to feel more of that bloating. Cause who, you know, a lot of women notice right before they get their period, right? They're so bloated because of those hormone shifts, but also what are your food choices during that time too? If you're, you know, having more cravings for salty food, you're going to retain more water. If you're having more sugar, foods that maybe, you know, kind of bother you, but your inhibitions are a bit down and you might indulge in those. So those can be a big part or big risk factors as well for bloating.
Definitely. And unfortunately, for a lot of us, some of those comfort foods or convenience foods, junk foods, can contain things that really promote inflammation in our body and can stimulate inflammation and irritation of our gut lining. And just some people are more susceptible to experiencing something called visceral hypersensitivity, which again can be more of that discomfort, pain, and that can be linked with bloating, especially for people who have irritable bowel syndrome or IBS. And yeah, again, those, there, some of those comfort foods, some of those convenience foods can contain things like gluten, corn, dairy, sugar. Those can all stimulate that inflammation of our gut lining and really not feel great. And again, also really lead to more bloating and discomfort as well. So especially if you do find that you're reaching for more of those before your period or at certain times, you may notice that you have more bloating around that time. Also, you know, especially even with those hormonal changes and those cyclical changes, sometimes if you are experiencing a time before your period where you have a higher appetite, you may find that you're just eating a larger volume, larger meals, eating late at night, that can also influence kind of how well your body is able to digest foods, or even to a certain extent have some what's called like physiological bloating, where, you know, if you're going to be eating a large amount of food, your body is going to have to respond. And sometimes that is with, you know, having your belly out a little bit too. It can also really make a difference with how toned your muscle is, or what's actually happening, not only kind of with your visceral organs, but also with your abdominal wall. So especially if you have some abdominal wall looseness or laxity, if you have been diagnosed with diastasis recti after having kids, then that can make that bloating sometimes more prominent and just even easier to happen, even if you're not eating large amounts of food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. And we do notice, you know, age-related muscle weakness as we get older too. So if we're not doing, you know, our core exercises, our pelvic floor exercises that your pelvic physiotherapist recommended, then you're going to have weaker musculature too. And everything kind of, I don't want to say sags out, but you don't have that same muscle tone. And then throw in, if you have the diastasis recti, that can make a difference. For me, I noticed lately I was on, you know, I was having a lot of that pure gum, P-U-R gum, and it has sugar alcohols in it. So anything that ends in an O-L can cause some gas and bloating in people. You may not be able to digest them properly. They may cause some fermentation and gas production from the bacteria acting on them in the gut. So you want to look at what you're putting in your body too, things that maybe aren't, you know, derived directly from nature. These have been, you know, synthesized. They are supposed to be, in quotes, better than some of the synthetic sweeteners, but you can still get reactions to things like sorbitol, erythritol, xylitol. So if I had a lot of that gum, then I was suffering, and then my partner was too, because of the gas and bloating that I had. So it's really kind of it's important to do a food journal, but look at those things you're eating and drinking as well, right? If you're having high fructose corn syrup, you might be sensitive to lactose. There's things called called FODMAP foods that we can link for a link to a list of those. But that can be found in many fruits, vegetables, legumes, lactose. These are things that our body has a hard time breaking down and produce a lot of gas in the gut. So you want to keep a diet diary and see, okay, am I waking up with gas, you know, the night after I have maybe some of these sweeteners or some of these foods that are on the list, and then try to eliminate those and then see, okay, do I feel better the next morning if I, you know, didn't eat that certain food with dinner? That can be a good investigation to do as well. And our food sensitivities can change over time. So you might have been fine with something, you know, a few years ago, but maybe now your body's reacting to it. And especially if you have that leaky gut or stress hormones have been off, or you've taken antibiotics, for example.
Yeah, definitely. You know, things like antibiotics can really throw off the balance of bacteria along your gut. Again, we need this beneficial bacteria to help to, you know, digest our food, really process a lot of things along our digestive tract, and also really help to kind of manage that our immune system and so that bacteria sometimes, you know, when it's thrown off track, then our immune system is more likely to start to react to certain foods that maybe we didn't react to before. It's really key for also helping with our hormone balance as well, like you were saying, Lisa, in terms of that balance of estrogen and it impacting, you know, blood loading and water retention and that kind of thing as well. So definitely the idea of, you know, a dysbiosis, or, you know, really an overgrowth of not great bacteria or yeast, and lower amounts of beneficial bacteria can really impact how you are able to digest your food and can also cause some bloating. I always think too, no matter kind of what foods you're eating, it's also really important to make sure that you are really priming your digestive system to be able to be ready to digest food. So often what can happen, especially when we are often in stress mode or on the go, really busy, we can have lower levels of stomach acid production, lower levels of digestive enzyme and pancreatic enzyme productions. We've definitely talked about this before when we've talked about stress and our adrenal glands. When, you know, when we're in that fight or flight, our sympathetic nervous system response, really our stress mode, or even you can think of it as your performance mode too, when your adrenaline, your cortisol is pumping. Our body naturally responds by reducing the blood flow to our core organs, to our digestive system. When you're in fight or flight mode, your body doesn't care about digesting your food. It's worried about what's going to kill you, even though if something's not going to kill you in the moment, but that's what it's designed to do. And so it, you know, not digesting your food is not going to kill you. So it doesn't care about digesting your food when you're in that fight or flight sympathetic nervous system mode. So what's really important is to make sure that you're in your parasympathetic nervous system mode, your rest digest mode, your relaxation mode. And so sometimes we need to really help to promote that proper stomach acid production, enzyme production, bile flow from the gallbladder is really key for digesting your fats and can really cause some bloating and gas if that's not happening properly, especially if you've had your gallbladder removed, if you've had gallbladder surgery to remove your gallbladder for gallbladder issues in the past. That can absolutely impact how you're digesting your food, and that can impact bloating as well.
For sure. Yeah. All very good points. Sometimes we've forgotten, you know, we forget that we need to go back to the basics. Like how many of us moms, you know, we're standing and eating, we're working while we're on our computers, we're up and down getting the kids different things. So we're not getting that feed forward, that cephalic digestion, which is like the message from our environment to our brain to tell us that we're going to eat. That releases the about 20% of our digestive juices. But a lot of times it's like, let me pull this food out, let me eat it. So we don't have that anticipation, the cooking, the preparing, the smelling of the food. We're not salivating. So we're just kind of eating it and our body's not ready to do that. So it's challenging, but we really want to focus on sitting down, taking a few slow breaths, you know, being grateful for our food, chewing, you know, really slowly. You can count, you know, if you want the number of chews, putting your fork down between bites and really savoring and eating mindfully, tasting it, smelling your food, being aware of the texture. You know, it's no wonder we have so many digestive issues because we're living in a state of chronic stress. It's go, go, go. We're not allowing ourselves to get into that parasympathetic nervous system. So we can't emphasize enough how important that is for sure. And then, of course, with bloating, so that constipation can be a cause, right? If things are not moving through the gut properly. So maybe you're not getting enough water or fiber, even through fruits and vegetables, right? That roughage, a lot of people don't get quite enough. You know, they might be eating fiber one bars or bran cereal, but there's so many other ways to get fiber in with other nutrients, with more kind of hydration attached to that food too. So constipation, you know, we did an episode on that too. So we can link to that, but that can be caused by so many factors, but we want to support how things move through your digestive tract. And if you're sitting and you're stagnant, you're not moving around, things are going to be slow through the gut as well, right? Walking, yoga, different twisting moves help to move things down through the digestive tract. Ensuring you have the right gut bacteria is also really key. So if there's constipation, you want your naturopathic doctor to get to the root cause of that. And then that can really reduce the bloating as well. And that's a whole other topic we could go deep into, but maybe not today.
Yeah, for sure. We can dive deep into that another day. And maybe another topic too, you know, going through all of these pieces. And like you said, Lisa, you know, really starting with the basics, if all of these things haven't necessarily shifted, your experience with bloating and you continue to have bloating, something to really look at considering is to see if there's any potential endometriosis. You know, over 80% of women with endometriosis experience bloating as one of their symptoms. So especially if you are experiencing a lot of pelvic pain, menstrual pain, and you also experience bloating, that's something to really look into whether that's a factor for you.
Exactly. Yeah, that can be a big symptom of endometriosis. And then the stress hormone cortisol too. So a lot of us have been, you know, running on empty, burning the candle at both ends during the pandemic and even before. So our cortisol, you know, may be elevated. We need the right amounts at the right times. But if it's chronically elevated, then we actually release more of a hormone called antidiuretic hormone. So it means, you know, antidiuretic. So you're not going to urinate as much. So you actually have more water retention too. So with higher cortisol, you can feel more bloated. And we know that can contribute to weight gain in the midsection and blood sugar issues as well. But there is that hormonal component, even outside of the female hormones, that can influence bloating. And then you're not going to be in that rest and digest phase either. So really key to get into that parasympathetic nervous system. So I think we covered a lot of causes. Is there anything we missed, Tony?
No, I think we covered all of the causes, all of the things to really, I mean, it's a lot of things to keep in mind when you're asking the question, like, why am I bloated? Where is this bloating coming from? And that's why, again, you know, as naturopathic doctors, we really do like to look at, okay, let's figure out the root cause, because not is not going to be the same answer for each person. And that's even where some testing can make a difference, to really look at, okay, let's try and answer that question of, you know, where your bloating is coming from. And, you know, oftentimes it can involve, you know, doing some trials with eliminating certain foods. Like we mentioned, you know, it may be looking at doing a elimination challenge when it comes to any food sensitivities, or even doing a trial of a low FODMAP diet to see if that helps to reduce your bloating. There's also some food sensitivity blood tests that can be done that can help to start to really pinpoint some of the foods that your immune system may be responding to with inflammation that could be contributing to bloating. As well as even looking at, again, that kind of stimulation of your digestive system by doing something like an HCL challenge. That's using a supplement that contains betaine HCL, which is basically hydrochloric acid, basically your stomach acid, to see does increasing that level of acid help to reduce your bloating and help to support your digestion. So those are some of the things that can be done.
For sure. Yeah. And then looking at that dysbiosis too. So the good and the bad bacteria, you know, we need to have an appropriate balance, and those imbalances can happen in different parts of the body, right? So doing like a stool test, a comprehensive digestive stool analysis, you know, potentially with parasitology, like a parasite test too, just to see, is there a yeast overgrowth? Are there organisms in the stool that's reflecting what's in the gut that are in higher levels than we want to be? Do you have low levels of lactobacillus and bifidobacterium, which are in quotes the good bacteria? You know, some people may respond to some probiotics, the good bacteria, if they have that SIBO, that small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, but most people do benefit from having really good numbers of those. So you can do a whole workup on the stool and even get parameters in how you're breaking down your fats, carbs, and protein, if there's inflammation in the gut lining, if there's like an overactive immune response in the gut. So that can be really valuable. And then, you know, higher up organisms like H. pylori, that causes a lot of reflux symptoms. But for some people, they also get bloating. Maybe they have silent reflux or they don't really get heartburn symptoms, but they have other digestive issues. It's important to rule out that H. pylori bacteria that can thrive in the stomach too. And even the small intestinal bacterial overgrowth of bacteria can be assessed by a breath test. So you can do a blood, stool, breath test for some of these organisms through H. pylori, SIBO, through the ones that thrive in the lower digestive tract as well. And even that stool analysis challenges the bad organisms. You can grow them in culture. They do this in the lab and then challenge them with different antimicrobial herbs and even antibiotics to see which ones will be killed off by certain herbs or certain medications, because we know those bacteria can become resistant as well to herbs and antibiotics. So, you know, sometimes treatments don't always work. So you can get an individualized workup for your gut flora, which is pretty amazing, right? Who would have thought probably even, you know, 20 years ago, this was possible. So.
Absolutely. So those are a lot of great options. In addition to even getting a conventional medical workup for your digestive system, that would include something like an endoscope with a potential biopsy, colonoscopy, or are looking at an abdominal ultrasound or imaging to see if anything is structurally happening that would be contributing to your bloating. Sometimes that can pick up things like endometriosis, but that's also where also possibility would be doing a laparoscopic assessment to see if anything is there as well.
Definitely. And then you can get a workup through blood to check liver enzymes, you know, pancreatic enzymes, because you may have fatty livers actually becoming more prevalent too as women are getting older and men are getting older with dietary problems with too much carbs. Maybe their insulin's not working properly. That can cause a lot of bloating too. So doing a liver digestive panel blood test along with the abdominal ultrasound can be really useful. So your clinician, your naturopathic doctor can help troubleshoot. You're not going to, you know, need all of these tests, but through the signs and symptoms that you're experiencing, along with the bloating and the type of bloating and when it happens, you'll be able to narrow down the tests that you have to get. So don't bring this list of tests to your doctor and be like, I want all of these, because they're going to say, no way. And then just with the hormones too, you can get the cortisol tested in saliva and urine. You can get a female hormone panel through blood, through your urine. You can do a thyroid panel blood test. So just to make sure these hormonal, there might not be these hormonal issues or triggers for your bloating.
And absolutely, really looking at, again, when you experience your bloating, even looking at some of those initial trials and challenges, may be a good thing to do before starting to get into some of that testing as well.
Exactly. And doing the diet diary and the period tracker, tracking your symptoms, that's also really useful too, right? So start with those for sure.
Absolutely. And also something to even look at, you know, some of those kind of trials and tests can also, you know, actually turn into more of a regular treatment and regular thing that you can do to prevent and treat your bloating. You know, you, especially if there are foods that are involved in your bloating, then you, you know, in terms of treating and preventing, you'd want to look at avoiding those food triggers. If, you know, dysbiosis or that imbalance of bacteria along your digestive tract is, you know, a part of your bloating, you may want to increase more and have more fermented foods, you know, things like sauerkraut, things like kimchi, even things like yogurts with active bacterial cultures in them can be really helpful. Or doing things like using bitter herbs or apple cider vinegar, things that are going to really help to stimulate and really prime your digestive system to get ready for food. You already mentioned, you know, chewing your food really well, eating while you're sitting down, calm and relaxed, and also avoiding diluting your stomach acid by drinking too much water while you're eating. That's definitely something that, especially if you're going out to eat, sometimes we get used to having big glasses of water at our dinner table, where that's really unnecessary and it can really reduce your body's ability to break your food down properly and can lead to more bloating. So those are all things to really consider when you're looking at, okay, what can you do about your bloating?
Really great tips. Yeah, I have a little bit of apple cider vinegar. Sometimes I'll mix it in a little shot glass of water, like maybe up to about a tablespoon, or sometimes I'll just take it straight from a spoon, but sometimes that's a little too harsh for people to do, but right before I eat. And then it's great to have some lemon in warm water when you wake up, or sip on that throughout the day. You can use a straw if you're worried about your enamel on your teeth, but that can be really useful. I find adding bitter herbs and foods to my salad or dishes can make a big difference, like some arugula, chop up some radicchio, have some artichoke, beets, dandelion greens. Beets aren't bitter, but they get the digestive juices and the bile flowing. So some of these foods can be really useful. And even ginger, chamomile, fennel, anise, these can all be preventative as well as support you when you do feel bloated, like some ginger tea, maybe put a little bit of apple cider vinegar or lemon juice if you prefer that taste in there. That can be really helpful. And if you have a lot of water retention, potentially related to the hormones that we talked about, like estrogen, progesterone, or cortisol issues, the dandelion leaf has a little bit of a diuretic effect. The root has a little bit more of a, not laxative, but it helps move things through the digestive tract if you're a bit constipated. So that can be beneficial. And then another good one for IBS-related bloating, irritable bowel syndrome-related bloating, you know, maybe if there's a little bit of diarrhea or looser stools, some good quality peppermint extract. So that can be a few drops of an essential oil, or there's enteric-coated peppermint capsules that can be beneficial if you're feeling really bloated kind of in the lower abdomen. If you're feeling like it's in the stomach or higher up, maybe that's not the best one, because for some people that may cause some reflux or heartburn.
Absolutely. And, you know, using some of those herbs and nutrients, it can be something that you can use as a preventative, like you said, Lisa, or it can be, you know, something that you can have after a meal, you know, whether you have some ginger tea or chamomile tea, or even at those times when you are more likely to feel bloated, especially if you have some of those hormonal triggers, you know, before your period or with hormone fluctuations that you're experiencing, to have some of those on hand can be really great to have. And definitely, especially if you're getting the support from a naturopathic doctor with dealing with dysbiosis, SIBO, or other things, you know, using probiotic supplementation, using antimicrobial herbs, you know, specific extracts of oregano, garlic, thyme, or golden seal, or getting, you know, prescription antibiotics, especially something, you know, like rifaximin, which is a very specific antibiotic also often used in SIBO. That's definitely something that we've talked about in our previous SIBO episode. So you can definitely go to the show notes to find the link to that as well, if you want to find more information about that. There's also, especially in terms of looking at if there's any motility issues, inflammation issues, reflux issues that are also, you know, going hand in hand with your bloating, other supplements like DGL or deglycerinated licorice, slippery elm, marshmallow root, D-limonene, melatonin can also be really helpful to support your motility and, you know, proper function of your esophageal sphincters that can really help to prevent, you know, reflux and bloating from happening too. I'm also a really big fan of really getting some hands-on treatment and therapy to really help to support your visceral organs, your abdominal organs. And sometimes, you know, small shifts can make a huge difference with how that bloating can come up and how your digestive system can function. So getting some, you know, manual visceral therapy by a trained osteopathic practitioner, a physiotherapist, or especially, again, if there is some issues with your pelvic floor, with your core, that could be supported with really specific treatment and exercises provided by a pelvic floor physiotherapist can be really helpful, effective. And again, some naturopathic doctors are also trained in these therapies as well.
Yeah, these can be really valuable and often overlooked. And acupuncture can be performed by an acupuncturist or your naturopathic doctor. But we know things like scar tissue from, you know, potentially a C-section or other traumas or abdominal surgery can really impact how things move through the gut. And these therapies can help start to break that down and release some of the tension that's caused by the scar tissue. Some people have nerve issues to the gut, whether it's caused by diabetes or trauma or other issues. So osteopathy can be really great to support the blood flow and the nerve function as much as possible. And we didn't mention hernias. These are getting more common as people get older too, right? Where things in the digestive tract are pushed in places they're not supposed to. They may be pushed through the diaphragm. You might have, you know, the stomach a little higher up than it's supposed to be. So you can get more bloating and pressure. So these supports can really help move things through the digestive system and potentially help realign the structure of the gut, which may be a problem and a cause of your bloating too. And then another naturopathic favorite are castor oil packs. So now you can buy these already kind of pre-made for you from the Queen of Thrones, but you can apply this piece of material, usually cotton, over the liver area, so below the right rib cage, and apply, you know, some castor oil to it, let it saturate the material, put some heat on top. You might let it sit there for 20 minutes. Sometimes people will sleep with the castor oil pack overnight if they don't have heat on it. But this can just help move things through the gut, and the castor oil is absorbed and has, you know, anti-inflammatory properties, supports lymphatic flow, can reduce, I mentioned, inflammation, but just really help to relax the gut and move things through as well. So these are some kind of more physical therapies that you can incorporate.
Absolutely. Castor oil packs are a really nice way of really supporting your abdominal area, your digestion. And again, especially regardless of what can be a cause of some of that bloating too, it can be really helpful.
Exactly. So you don't have to do all of these things. I know it sounds like a lot, but number one, slow down, eat your food mindfully, have a bit of apple cider vinegar or lemon water, and then look at some of these other supports after you talk to your naturopathic doctor. And there may be some testing to explore as well, but really listening to your body and paying attention to the symptoms and tracking when you're getting them can be a real eye opener for a lot of people. And some people might notice, oh yeah, I'm bloated during the week because I'm in a rush and I'm, you know, not eating well on the weekends or on vacation. I'm so relaxed. I'm digesting properly. So even noticing shifts related to that can be useful too.
That self-awareness is really key. And again, really just taking a moment to really connect with your body and really look at like what's happening with your body? When are things happening with your body? That's such a huge key in terms of really starting to get some answers and to get some relief as well, so that you don't have to have, you know, always that mummy tummy or that food baby happening on a regular basis.
Exactly. You can keep that top button buttoned up all day if you want, but I don't want to. So,
or not,
but it's your choice.
Oh, awesome, Lisa. So why don't we switch gears and move on to, our supermom moments, mama mess ups and mama must haves for the week.
Sure. I think you have a good supermom moment this week, Tony.
For sure. Well, you know, it's summertime and summer really kind of started late over here in Calgary, but it's happening with a vengeance. So we've been having like an extended heat wave happening. And, you know, here in Calgary, not a lot of us have air conditioning. We're not used to a lot of heat and extreme heat that other people may experience on a regular basis. So definitely when it comes to staying cool and especially to have a good sleep in the evening, we always keep in mind ways to cool down, especially during a heat wave. And this is where even just last night, it was a hot day, it was over 30 degrees, and we were thinking, okay, how are we going to cool down and again, have a good night's sleep? And we had talked about going to a splash park. We didn't get around to it. And then even Frankie in the evening was still like, when are we going to the splash park? So just thought, okay, let's just throw on our swimsuits, throw some towels in a bag and just go. And thankfully, you know, there's a great free splash park less than, you know, about 10 minutes drive from our place. So we just hopped in the car, ran around for a little bit. Frankie had a great time just running, which was also a great way of getting her ready to have a nice relaxing sleep as well.
Win-win.
Total win-win-win. And it was just even a great time to be outside. Already when a lot of the heat, or at least the sun wasn't as hot as it was earlier in the day, it was still pretty warm out. So it was really just a great, quick, easy way of cooling down and not needing to have a lot of prep or planning. It just, you know, it happened spontaneously. So definitely that was definitely a supermom moment where it was like, let's just make this happen. And everyone was, I think, happier for it.
I love that. It's a great way to cool down and lots of fun, and that ensures a easier bedtime, most likely. So great supermom moment, Tony.
Yeah, thanks. Now, Lisa, I know you're an awesome mom. And do you have a mama mess up to share with us this week?
I do. Yeah. So Stuart, he's 5 and a half now and he loves soccer. So we've signed him up for soccer lessons and he can play for hours on end. So we typically go to a soccer field nearby and play, but sometimes we'll play in our backyard if we just have a little bit of time before going out or doing something. So we have a Toronto backyard. So we have a shed, a little bit of a paved kind of pathway to the shed. And then on either side of the paved pathway, is our garden. And so it's not a very big area, but we can still set up a soccer net at one end near the shed and we kind of kick back and forth. But the other day he actually fell into the rose bush and he got lots of scratches and now the rose bush is totally knocked over. So it's a bit of a mess that we're like, we didn't really anticipate that could happen, although he's playing right near the rose bush. So yeah, so I think we got to just take that extra, 10-minute walk, go to the soccer field to prevent any scratches or injuries. And I think we're going to actually take out the rose bush. It's so beautiful, but it's actually pretty demolished right now. So we did knock it totally over, poor guy. So that's my mama mess up.
Oh no, but definitely a learning experience. I mean, especially if he's getting older and he might need a little bit more room to kick that ball around.
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, we can't move and get a bigger backyard. So we'll just go over to the park there. So anyway,
and that's what they're for.
That's what they're for. And then Tony, what's your mama must have?
Well, my mama must have, especially since I was talking about the heat wave that's happening here in Calgary right now over the summer. What I've really found to be incredibly useful is to have a spray bottle with water and some peppermint oil. We talked about some of the benefits of peppermint oil already, but peppermint oil is very cooling. So having a spray bottle with water and peppermint oil on my bedside table has really come in handy, especially lately when I've maybe had a little bit of a hot flash at night, or even just when the house isn't cooling down at night, just to be able to reach over, grab a spray bottle, just kind of spray myself has been really helpful to be able to fall back asleep when I'm waking up hot in the middle of the night.
Ooh, I gotta try that.
It's very handy. Now, last night, Frankie kind of crawled into bed with us. And when I did a spray for myself, she got a little bit of a spray and she wasn't very happy about that, but oh, well, she needs to sleep in her own bed. So.
It's like a deterrent, right? When you spray like cats with water, if they do something wrong or maybe that's a bad analogy. I don't know.
Not intended, but maybe a bit of a bonus there.
Every time you come into the bed, Frankie. No. Oh my gosh, too funny. But I love peppermint oil too. So that's part of my mama must have, because we've been having a fun summer. It's busy in a good way, because I'm trying to, get Stuart out a bit more, having, a shorter workday. So condensing things into less time so we can go to the park, so we can go do some fun things. But I'm needing a little bit of a boost sometimes to get me going. So even before we started recording, I took a few drops of the doTERRA peppermint oil and a little bit of water. That just wakes me up. Some people like to put a drop on their thumb and then touch it to the roof of their mouth. So that can give you a nice jolt of energy. And I, if I'm feeling tired in the morning, my 2-minute cold shower, as cold as I can take it, really rejuvenates me. And then doing breath work as well, the breath of fire from Kundalini yoga can be really regenerating, rejuvenating. And the Wim Hof breathing method. So they have some short videos on YouTube that really helps to wake me up in the morning. If I didn't, allot enough time for a workout, I'll do the breath of fire in that in my cold shower instead. And then I'm ready to go. So these things don't take long, but sometimes you need that little boost, right?
Absolutely. That sounds great, Lisa.
Yeah, yeah. So give it a try.
For sure. So, and then I'll let you guys know what else is happening with us. My next hypnobirthing session for expecting parents looking to really support their natural instincts around labor and birth and decrease fear and anxiety is happening this fall. You can join me by going to hypnobirthingcalgary.com/register. And Dr. Lisa's new awesome meetup group, Wild Woman Adventures Toronto, is happening. If you want to get out in nature and connect with other women and push yourself out of your comfort zone, you can check that out.
I'll add one event that we're doing. So there's actually a cold shower challenge starting September 19th. So it's a 5-day challenge, and there's a special guest speaker launching the challenge, Lisa Crickfaluzzi. She was on a few episodes back. She's an expert in cold water therapy. So she's going to do a workshop where we all do it online together. And then you actually take your first cold shower, in quotes, together. Obviously, you're in your own house, and then you come back and share your experience. And then there's emails that'll be delivered to your inbox for the rest of the 5 days. There's a couple of group Zoom calls. So you can sign up for that in my Instagram at drlisaweeksnd. The link is in the bio, so you can check that out.
That sounds awesome, Lisa. I can't wait for that. And then also your Wild Collective for fall 2022 waitlist is available on wildcollectivetoronto.com.
That's right.
Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. Again, you can check out the show notes at perimenopausalmamas.com. You can email us, connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. We'd love for you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. That really helps other perimenopausal mamas find us. And you can also support us by visiting our Patreon page. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.
Until next time.
Bye.